Welcome to Bellwether Friends! Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us, because we're librarians. I'm Anna. There are cats playing in the background.
I'm Aline.
Every couple of weeks, we will get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think, and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 71. We have no guest. It is just us. We are following up on episode 70 directly, in which we spoke to Stephanie Anderson about reality television.
At length.
At length. So this is, we're going to try for a shorter episode.
We say that sometimes.
It's always true. We are trying.
We're always trying.
Used to say, you are very trying.
You are very trying. If you try hard and believe in yourself, you'll make it through this episode.
So what we did was we acted on some of Stephanie's suggestions, and I also had Aline watch a few other things, and we're just going to go through the things that we watched and talk about them, and if we're lucky, we'll make some very savvy points about them, and if not, then you'll just be, like, shaking your device, saying, why am I listening to this?
And I have the show notes from episode 70 up before me, so I can make sure to reference the episode without repeating myself too much, if all goes well.
If possible. I'm not sure. We do a lot of repeating ourselves on this podcast.
We do it in life. We bring it to the podcast turns for out. You.
So the first thing we watched after recording with Stephanie was an episode of Unreal, season one, episode one. And now Unreal is the scripted show about the making of a Bachelor-style reality television show.
As Stephanie guessed / suggested / advised, I liked it a lot. I thought it was good. I want to watch the rest of it. Even though I don't like the character they have set up as the central character, I think that everyone on the show is kind of unsympathetic, and the central character is, like, younger and cuter than some of the others. And my favorite character is the
boss lady?
Yes.
Mine too.
Well, of course. You have a thing for boss ladies.
I do.
I don't usually, but I like her professionalism. That's how I will characterize it.
Okay. Ruthlessness? Something.
Something.
So we subsequently watched the second episode, and we are committing to watching additional episodes.
Well, I'd like to. It's going to just be added into the 7,000 narratives that we have going on Netflix and Hulu and DVD and our backup drive.
Right. Great. So do we have anything else to say about Unreal?
If you are a fan of The Bachelor, I think you might get a kick out of it, because it is showing you things that you might suspect are going on when you're watching the Bachelor / Bachelorette franchise. And the creator and producer of Unreal is a former producer on the Bachelor Bachelorette franchise. So she's possibly giving us a behind the scenes view through this scripted show, like Stephanie said. And it's
feels that way.
It feels that way.
I want to believe it, even if it's not true.
Yeah.
So
I just like it because I like the stuff that is going on. You can tell that they're, like, trying to cast this person as a villain, that they're trying to cast this person as the front runner, that they're trying to cast this person as the wild card. And I'm speaking as though I know, when all I have seen is one episode of The Bachelorette.
Oh, well, that's true.
You know, well, that's all I've seen.
But
and
we know that there are tropes in television, mm-hmm. and that, you know, you suspect when you watch reality television that they are trying to make the real people conform to the tropes that we all expect right. in scripted television. And so it's nice to see it in operation, even if like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, I might watch it half behind one hand over through my fingers.
Yes.
So that was a enthusiastic thumbs up for Unreal.
Yep.
We then watched an episode of Chopped.
Oh, Ted. I love Ted from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and he is the host of Chopped. Something came up on Twitter the other day that said, if you want to know how messed up the American medical system is, just watch Chopped, because every third chef is like, I'm here to win money for my mom's antibiotics. In a single episode, four chefs face off over three courses, and at the end, the winner gets $10,000. And so it's not season long. It's episodic, which I appreciate. It's competition, which is not my favorite because I get super anxious when things start to go.
I get really anxious, too. We watched season 27, episode 4, Chinese New Year, which had a lot of potential to be insensitive, I thought.
And it wasn't that bad. I mean, they were throwing things at them thematically, so yep. They had chicken feet in the basket,
yep.
And so Chopped is
they
the
had
one
a little
that
dragon
has,
dancing around at the breaks and so on.
The basket of stuff. They've got like four things. It's not a single element like some show.
Iron
there's
Chef.
A single element that you have to incorporate. So it was very anxiety inducing, and I don't want to watch it because my sympathetic heart can't take it. But I love Ted. And I don't like the judges because, well, I like, is this the one with the wild blonde lady judge? No, that was the dancing show.
Yeah, that was. We'll get to that shortly.
Yeah. The judges are all sourpusses and they're chefs and nothing lives up to their expectations or their standards.
Well,
and
even if it tastes good, then the presentation is off or the flavor profile is not what they would have recommended.
Yeah, it's not what they would have done.
I don't know.
Or something. So I have more to say on cooking shows because we saw more than one. A competition show like Project Runway, which is a season-long thing where you're going to see things where somebody's going to do well and somebody's going to do poorly, and when you're watching a season-long group of competitors, you're getting to know people more often, more thoroughly. And the little facey time talking on Chopped is not... I mean, it's one episode, so you don't care about the people, but things start to go wrong, and it just triggers my panic response, and I don't like it.
That's fine. I mean, obviously it has some kind of winning formula, as this is season 27
right.
watched.
And it's like, doesn't Iron Chef, isn't it just a single episode with the three people facing off, and then, you know, it's all
no,
over
it's
at the end?
No, it's one challenger versus the Iron Chef, usually. But yeah.
But it's not a season that starts
yeah,
with 30
yeah.
people
not,
that are winnowed
no, it's
down.
It's not like Top Chef or Master Chef.
Okay, so that's a thing.
So we can segue into Great British Bake Off / Great British Baking Show, which is the American version, the American name of the show. So I got the DVD set from work. It says Great British Baking Show Season 1, but I looked up to see what it was in England, since the contestants were referring to things on the show like they knew what the show was about. So apparently it's series 5 on the show. So
it was marketed as season 1 here. And we watched
four episodes.
And it was
out of 10.
Good. I have anxiety when things start to go wrong and they're making you bake. And they're making you do something where you have to let something rise. And they're like, you've got 3 hours, go. And I know enough about cooking to know that you can't pause to rinse a spoon and get something done in 3 hours. And that's problematic. Just give it a little bit of a wiggle window. I'm not saying give them 10 days to do it. Just give them 4 hours if they have to make something rise for three.
I mean, I feel like, as opposed to Project Runway, where they're like, put together an avant-garde look in half an hour, or whatever. Ugh. That they seem to be giving them reasonable time. And that while things are rising, they could be prepping other stuff. You know?
Okay, well then they're filming it poorly.
Well, they're trying to heighten the tension.
They don't need to do that. Shh. That's not why I'm watching TV.
What did you think of the hosts and the judges?
I love the hosts. I don't like the judges. I feel like the judges have some cultural cachet in the UK that they don't have here. That would be
Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood as of the iteration that we were watching.
Right, and it, Mel and Sue, who were in the iteration that we watched. And I like Mel and Sue. I think they bring something to it. I think that Mary is that chilly, remote old lady who you can never please, although she's shown kindness and warmth in the episodes we've seen. And Paul Hollywood is that celebrity jerk who nobody will ever please. And he has also shown warmth, but he has mostly, like, the tone of his voice when he was telling someone how something came out. The chef said, "But," and he's like, no, but you did great. But, like, nobody believes it because of the way he talks.
Well, his name is Paul Hollywood.
So I think this was something that I already knew. I think that I don't really like competition shows. I am more interested in peeking behind the scenes at things. And a competition show where I don't like anyone is going to be easier for me to watch. But that's not going to be very fun either.
I was going to say, I haven't watched The Great British Bake Off either.
No.
And many of the people were sympathetic, and it seemed like they all seemed like nice and interesting people. And I appreciated how the host would throw us little weird factoids about them.
Yeah, and I liked that they were all amateurs.
Yep.
They were, you know, there was a builder and a 17-year-old schoolgirl and, you know, this old dude who clearly picked up baking in his retirement and has just been puttering around his kitchen. And I liked that aspect of it. The people on Chopped were working chefs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting that they get a $10,000 prize, and one of them said they were going to open a restaurant, and I don't think they know about startup costs.
Well, yeah. So, I think that I might force you to watch the rest of the season of Great British Bake Off. Another issue with it is that I like baking, and I like sweets, and I like the things that they're producing, although we think that they eat weird things over there.
Yeah, I am not interested in baking. I don't like to bake. I have a more savory palate. I was interested in the stuffed bread that they were making. Well, one of the things they made in the bread episode was, like, these stuffed savory breads. Many of them were savory. A couple were sweet. And that interested me, and I thought, well, that sounds good, and it made me want to do this thing that my mom made. That's probably part of it, and that I feel anxious about thinking about cakes not turning out. And I've never had a dramatic failure baking. I don't know why I am so resistant to baking.
It's all right. I'll bake.
Yeah, you can be the baker.
So, yeah, the remaining episodes are pies and tarts.
Ugh. Unless they do a meat pie.
Tarts and Vickers. Oh, tarts. Just kidding.
Pies and tarts and Vickers.
Continental cake.
Oh, no, that does not sound like pastries. That is going to go well. Pastries.
Advanced dough.
Maybe pastries, they'll stuff it with something tasty. Advanced dough.
Advanced dough. And pâtisserie and the final.
The final.
The final.
I already said something about Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood having some cultural cachet that doesn't translate to me. I think that folks who've watched a lot of cooking shows finding GBBO super refreshing because of the kindness and generosity among the contestants and the judges and the hosts is great. I'm no argument with that. And I probably don't want to watch all 27 seasons.
I don't think there are that many, but okay. I probably won't make you. Okay. Although Little G likes the show, so it is a thing that we could watch together. So that is something.
Okay.
So, we watched a lot of competition shows, because those are the ones I like. Who can say? One that I was streaming, so I picked it at random, was So You Think You Could Dance. We watched season 14. The episode was the top six performing, and it was like an hour and a half or 2 hours long. It was really, really long.
Really, really, really long.
And we had this conversation while it was happening where I said, I don't really know much about dancing, technically, so I can enjoy watching these bodies flinging themselves around the stage more than I can if I hear people singing, because I can tell if they're off pitch or if they're doing a bad job.
Right.
You said... I think it's the reverse for me. Would you care to elaborate?
So I think that your observation is probably good, and I have enough of an ear that I'm going to be picky about singing, but I can't sing, so I'm not going to judge them as much, and I guess I can't dance either, but I took a really lot of dance classes for a really lot of years, and there are some things that I have technical thoughts about, and there are other things that I don't. I was never a modern dancer. I also have the yoga teacher thing where I'm like, they need to not be doing that because that is going to ruin some part of their body for the rest of their lives.
That, I mean, a lot of them are like 19 and 20 and
yeah.
That's the thing that they're doing.
Right. Their dancing wasn't problematic. It was beautiful. I think I was.
It was beautiful. We had a lot of moments of saying, well, maybe your mom wouldn't have liked that.
Right. My mom doesn't like modern dance.
So if your mom ever listens to this podcast, she'll probably confirm that?
Probably. And then she'll want to not watch So You Think You Can Dance.
Yeah. So You Think You Can Dance was the one with the enthusiastic...
Mary Murphy. That's her name. She's dark-haired in this headshot that comes up in Googling So You Think You Can Dance judges. But she had blonde hair and lots of jewelry and a really loud jacket. And her enthusiasm was... evident.
Over the top.
Yeah.
And but that's great.
I really liked the way they were always talking about the choreographer and they were thanking the choreographer for putting the thing together, because the setup is that each amateur dancer has a professional dancer mentor partner who does the partner dances with them and works with them even in their individual dances. And there are staff choreographers who help them put things together that are really creative and interesting.
Yeah, and they are really good at putting everyone's Twitter handle on the screen all the time.
Yes, this is a show that I would appreciate for that, because I like to live tweet things. And
yeah, definitely. But it is also one where America decides.
Oh yeah, I don't like that at all. I don't want that to be, you know, to vote.
It's been a long time since I watched a show where America decides, and that is in all caps, in case you were wondering.
Is that American Idol? Does that happen too?
In The Voice, I think.
Does America decide on The Voice?
Well, not in the auditions, but once they get past that phase.
Does America decide on Project Runway?
No, America does not decide on Project
Runway. Tim Gunn decides?
No, Heidi Klum decides. I mean, she... The panel of judges decides.
Okay.
I'm going to take us to our last competition show, which I think was my favorite, but I already knew it was my favorite going in. That is RuPaul's Drag Race. Now, we watched the first episode of Season 8, which was also the 100th episode of the show, and we watched the last episode of Season 8 so that we could find out who won, and that was like a live extravaganza episode. This was your first exposure to RuPaul's Drag Race. Tell me what you think.
I loved it. I didn't doubt that I would love it. I appreciated the 100th episode factor because they were bringing in, and maybe this is the first episode of the season thing, where they bring in all of the winners from the previous seasons, and they have the photo shoot, and they do all of the things, and they have people picking and choosing different challenges, and
I think
so
that was
on.
A 100th episode.
Was that
thing,
100th yeah. episode stuff? So I... love drag queens. I think that drag performance is one of the highest art forms. It goes in with covers for me. It's
Wait,
not
what covers?
Covers. Cover songs.
Oh, cover songs.
Like, and I know it's a lot of lip syncing, not so much covers, but there is still covering going on. And there is singing going on in drag performances that I have seen.
You have to lip sync for your life.
I loved the creativity that was displayed. I loved the breadth of participation among the crowd. I don't know how you get on RuPaul's Drag Race, but I loved the geographic diversity and racial and age and talent diversity among the group. I was glad to see that my favorite was one of the finalists at the end, and I would like to watch more of it. I am daunted by trying to catch up with all the seasons and watch them all and know them all, because there were Seattle drag queens who I knew.
Right.
Not personally, but I knew their names from being in the local news, who had won a past episode, one of them. I'm not going to remember her name now.
That's okay.
But I'm for it. I am for it. It was good. It was fun.
I just have a note that I wrote down, which is that not knowing how to sew, when you know you're going to go on RuPaul's Drag Race and you don't know how to sew, is like going on Survivor without having taught yourself, like, how to start a fire out of nothing.
Yeah, you need to know how to sew.
Just...
And you could make do knowing how to sew the way I know how to sew, which was, you know, being 10, 11, 12, learning from my grandmother and, like, taking home ec for one quarter in ninth grade.
Yeah.
I could get farther than that one who couldn't sew at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite as bad as being on Project Runway and not knowing how to sew. But there is an element of constructing.
It's very close.
Constructing. I don't understand. The show has been on now for many 100 episodes.
Well, also, in drag performance, which many of these people are established drag performers embarking on this, there is a DIY element to that, because a lot of drag performers are not standard lady sizes,
right,
or the costumes that they want are not off the rack,
right,
and they need to create their look or create their element that they're working with. So who's doing that? You don't get to bring your costume designer with you if you've got one. But I really liked Brittany Guy.
Yeah, it was Derek,
Derek,
I think.
Brittany Guy, yeah.
He really did a great Brittany.
He did. I don't think that he was up to the challenge of the whole Drag Race thing, but I am super into an impersonator, a celebrity impersonator.
So, yeah, RuPaul, I'm glad that I had the opportunity to make you watch it with me.
Thanks. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome. I'm sure that Renata could catch us up on anything that we need catching up on.
She probably could. I was texting Renata while we were watching, because I was like, we're watching RuPaul's Drag Race, and I was trying not to live tweet the things we were watching because I didn't want to lose my content for this episode, and so I just had to text Renata.
So the last thing that we watched on Stephanie's recommendation was an episode and a third of Pretty Wild, which is the show about Alexis and Gabby Nyers and Tess Taylor, I think, the ones that were involved in the Bling Ring. I refer you to our last episode for more information, but the shows originally aired on E! And we couldn't find them streaming, so we had to sort of get what we could on YouTube. So we watched episode 6, which is called Vanity Unfair. Because it's the one where Alexis is interviewed by Vanity Fair, and they get the details wrong, and she has many attempts at calling Nancy Joe and telling her how disappointed she is. And it is a moment that is memorable for sure. What were your thoughts on Pretty Wild? Produced by Chelsea Handler, I believe.
Yeah, Chelsea Handler was one of the producers. It was a little glimpse into a slice of America that I am pretty ignorant about and may wish to retain that ignorance. If you know me at all, you know that is not something that I say lightly. I believe that everybody should know everything all the time. And this was a very creepy dynamic that I was observing with the Playboy playmate mom figure and these three beautiful young women, and this behavior that is sort of incomprehensible, and the lack of structure in their lives. There's not, doesn't appear to be jobs or school or
no, she was making her younger daughter get a job
for anything.
Yeah,
she was making her get a job, but they played that for total comedy that she was getting a job at this pet store, and they didn't get to the rude awakening part of the paycheck that won't buy you
anything
gum.
At all. Right,
and they didn't get that far in the episode we saw. But they did have her being trained at the pet store to wash a dog and express its anal glands. That went on a while. And this is a 20-minute show. So it was sort of interesting. I think that if you can get your hands on it and you want to see it, it's only 7 or 8 episodes. Yep. And they're super, super short. And then you can watch The Bling Ring or you can read the Vanity Fair article.
Yeah, it did make me want to know more about these people, like where they are now and like how the homeschooling worked and, you know, where this mom came from, because she seems totally on a different planet. And I have written down the quote where I identified with Alexis the most during the episode.
I remember this.
Which is when she said, she was talking about all the fancy shoes she wears. But then she said, I also love my Converse and my rainbow flip-flops.
Yes.
So.
I also love my Converse. I don't have rainbow flip-flops.
You should have rainbow flip-flops. Why don't you?
I don't know. I'll be Googling
that.
That's
an oversight.
Yes.
It did not make me want to watch more of the show, but it made me want to watch The Bling Ring or read a book that tells me something or read an article that's going to be written in 10 years that's like, where are they now?
Well, and it has been 10 years, and we did a little where
10
are they...
more years.
Okay, you want 10 more years. But it has been 10 years, and we did a little where are they not now Googling, and it was kind of interesting. I am sort of stumped by the appeal. And I said this in the last episode about not being really interested in regular people just doing stuff. So I want to watch the Osbournes, but I don't want to watch these folks who I don't know who they are. And they're just kind of doing stuff and displaying bad judgment that's making me uncomfortable. So.
Okay. I mean, I think that's fair. But I'm glad that we have seen the part where she makes the phone call over yes. and over again.
Yes.
So if that is ever referenced in anything else, then we could be like, ping,
right.
Got that cultural touchstone. Thank you, Stephanie.
And we will know. And we will be able to use it ourselves if someone claims that we were wearing 6-inch Louboutins with our tweed skirt in court when we obviously weren't.
Yeah. How could they get that wrong?
I don't know. It's very disappointing.
So we made a note of things that we forgot to mention on the last one. We watched an episode of House Hunters together about 3 or 4 months back, which featured people that you know on it.
Yes. So that was really kind of interesting. Some of our listeners may know them too. One of the sales managers with Gail was on House Hunters in Palm Springs looking for his retirement villa. And he and his fiance at the time, now they just got married this weekend. Yay, congratulations, Chuck and Mickey. Went through this really fascinating little thing. The way House Hunters is set up is that they have a realtor and there's a couple and they have all of these standards and they have a budget and the realtor shows them 3 houses and they pick between them. And you get to pick between them all along. The best part of House Hunters International is everyone saying that they want a full-size refrigerator and additional bathrooms because internationally, American houses are not the standard. But it's fun to watch House Hunters in the U.S. because mostly people are saying, I really don't like the color of these walls, as though painting walls was an issue. But Chuck and Mickey didn't do that. And it was
yeah, this was
fun.
My first episode of House Hunters that
ever?
I ever watched.
Oh, and see, I watched this a lot with my mom,
that
mostly
I,
international.
I mean, that I think, I can't remember watching it, but mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I didn't watch it. It just means I blocked it out.
You might have seen one at my mom's house.
I appreciate that you knew them, and so you could be like, oh yeah, they lived there, and now they're moving here, and like, having the background information on them made
on their relationship
more palatable, because otherwise I would have been like, these people are buying $1.5 million house, or whatever it was, I don't even remember, $8 million, whatever it was a number beyond what I would ever pay for a house. So, I, you know, I can understand that they wanted entertaining space, etc., but it wasn't really relatable to me in any way. Mostly because I don't want anyone to come over.
She doesn't mean that, everybody who's coming over next week.
Fine, I don't mean that, but, you know, I prioritize different things, like walls on which bookcases will fit.
Right. It's also fun to watch House Hunters because people have, they have various standards. Like, some of them need 18 bedrooms because everybody in the house has to have their own bedroom and they need 3 guest rooms. And Chuck and Mickey had have this grand piano that they wanted to be a showpiece in a central entertaining room. And they ended up with this amazing house that fits the piano beautifully. It was a really fun episode to watch, and I liked watching it because I knew the structure because I had watched a lot of House Hunters before, and it was really fun to know the people going into it and sort of be able to
ideal situation in which to watch it.
Yeah.
It made me wonder what it would be like to watch, you know, any of the other reality shows knowing one of the contestants only, you know, only tangentially maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we just had a little segue into other house-related reality shows because we didn't talk very much about them last time, and you had mentioned Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
So that goes way back to the 80s. I don't know if anybody else remembers Robin Leach and Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Is this Australian accent.
Of course.
And it was really interesting.
Where do you think I first started my Australian accent?
Is that where you picked it up? So... none of them were ever home. It was always like the caretaker gave this guy the keys and he came in with his camera crew and they walked around and they peered inside and they were like, look at this pearl-lined toilet. And all, and it was...
Do they still do that? Is that what Cribs was?
Well, I don't know. I wrote down Cribs because I never watched Cribs, but Cribs was an MTV, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, that was... music stars letting you into their houses it was later than my generation, but I remember enjoying Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous because it was very voyeuristic. You got to sort of see that, you know, we're in Monaco and we're checking out this condo where this person lives and they're obviously not here, so they must be at one of their 17 other villas or chateaus or whatever it is that they're doing. I also watched a show called America's Castles, which was the kind of thing where you saw the cottages in Newport, and they took the camera crews in, and you got to do your little tours. You can tour the houses in Newport now, but you could see them on TV. And there, I think there was a Canadian version of this show, and they were tours of historic houses and mansions that were... very aspirational in the 80s. They just showed you all of this fancy stuff that you could never imagine having in real life.
So that's what House Hunters, the one that we watched, was like.
It was a little bit like that. But there are a lot of House Hunters is where they go out to Illinois and this couple is pregnant and they need to move out of their one-bedroom apartment and find a nice little two-bedroom house. And they have $80,000 to spend. And there are more relatable episodes based on the location. Palm Springs is not a place where you can get a house for less than $1 million.
Right. Well, yeah.
So that was cool. I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about the sorts of things that I don't know if it's reality TV, but it's going along and just looking at stuff. You know, there's no competition. There's no elimination. There's no anything. It's just sort of tourism, some of the things.
That's probably what they were doing in the Bling Ring. They just accidentally took some of the stuff that they were looking at. No.
I don't know.
When they were in Orlando Bloom's house.
I don't know.
Let me see if this works.
Was that everything that we watched?
That is everything that we watched.
I feel like we did a good job going through the things that we were interested in pursuing and looking more closely at. I want to see more of Unreal. I want to see more of RuPaul's Drag Race. I could see those being enjoyable.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
I don't want to watch any more Chopped. I will watch more of The Great British Baking Show with you, with the promise that you make me cookies.
Oh, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Or biscuits, as the case may be.
You're the biscuit maker.
No, British biscuits.
Oh, get it. Like British chips.
Yes.
Okay.
Because there is a little bit of, I want to eat something now that I'm watching this food show that is competitive. Right. And I am saved from that with the chef shows that have the fear factor involved.
Well, I'm saved for it because mostly on the chef show they make meat stuff. And so I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'm not hungry now.
Right. And you're not interested at all. And then there are some things that are interesting to me. One, the filled bread that the mumsy one made that had the full English rolled up in a loaf of bread with the sausage and the bacon, and I was here for that.
Okay.
But most things I'm sort of like, meh. They did that cherry cake that had the
cherries
cut up
in it.
Candied cherries. They weren't maraschino cherries. They were those like waxy candied ones like in fruitcake. I was like, oh no. Also, there wasn't enough chocolate involved overall.
Well, maybe in the rest of the season? I don't know. Probably none.
Probably not.
Okay, so let's see. That was champagne over tennis balls?
Welcome to television's unchallenged authority on wealth, prestige, and success. It's another dazzling Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Meet the stars of show business and big business. Discover how life's winners live, love, and spend their fortunes. Enter their dazzling world of luxury on privileged tours of the fantasy palaces they call home. Is Robin Leach, who circles the globe to uncover the stories America will never stop talking about. On this High Note edition, meet the driving force behind opera's renaissance. Luciano Pavarotti even beat out the rockers to top the pop charts. The sport of kings has a new champion. Sly Stallone asks, anyone for polo? Britain's most talked about woman has it all. But behind the fairy tale fantasy of fashionable Princess Diana, there's a surprising royal price to pay. She's television's wicked witch of the nouveau riche, but Piper Laurie cast her own special spell for success the second time around. It's been good vibrations since 1962 for beach boy Mike Love. Come home to his surfing safari paradise for fun with Pop Sail On Sailor of Sound. These exciting stories and much, much more when Lifestyles returns in a moment.
Wow.
Oh, Robin Leach. We're going to link to that so that you can watch that if you want. She was not lying when they flashed on Donald Trump in the opening
credit
sequence.
That was just the intro, so...
And that was just the intro. It was a little nightmarish, but not unexpected. You'll be okay. You'll be okay.
Do you have any musical obsessions we could use to cleanse our palate?
Yes, I always have musical obsessions to cleanse my palate. We, a couple episodes ago, had Kesha's new album Rainbow in heavy, heavy rotation. And we put a couple of her songs on the Musical Obsessions playlist.
But we are not done.
But we're not done. We're not done. I am choosing Woman, which is not safe for work and is not family friendly and has explicit lyrics and is...
awesome.
Really awesome. You probably all know it already, and if you don't, hie thee to Spotify and play that
jam. And I am choosing Rainbow because I like it a lot. And I think it's also explicit and not safe for work, but you know, that's how the best songs go, I guess.
I was listening to the album on my headphones at work one day. I was hunkered down in the office trying to get some schedules done or something. And then I had it in my head. So I'm like walking around the library trying not to sing out loud.
Oh, yeah, good job.
Yeah, that was close. Do you have a regular obsession?
I do. So I have been listening to the audio version of Warbringer, by Leigh Bardugo, which is the Wonder Woman novelization we've all been waiting for. And it opens with Princess Diana, teenage Princess Diana, just on the island, basically protected by her mother, and all the other Amazons have had long, illustrious careers, and they're like, oh, she doesn't really prove herself, nor is she going to, and I can't even, it's so, she ends up rescuing a human mortal, that's the word I'm looking for. I believe she's, Wonder Woman is human. She rescues a mortal girl from a exploded ship, and she ends up having to decide whether to let her die or get her off the island and go on a quest, because this girl is a descendant of Helen of Troy, which means she's a warbringer, and wherever she goes, people are going to start fighting just because of some vibe that she gives off, especially if she gets to live till her 17th birthday. So it's an opportunity for Wonder Woman that will be to prove herself, and I am enjoying it very much.
Nice. I am obsessed with chilaquiles. And if you don't know what chilaquiles are, I will put a recipe in the show notes that approximates what I perceive them to be. I like to call it breakfast nachos, but it is different than that, and it's one of those sort of leftover cobbled together dishes that in the Mexican tradition that you will have it in a breakfast buffet at a Mexican hotel. It is tortilla chips tossed with enchilada sauce and cheese and baked. And sometimes there's scrambled eggs in it, and sometimes there's other things in it, but it is basically enchilada sauce and chips and cheese. So okay. It's like breakfast nachos, but the sauce softens them up a little, so you don't eat it with your fingers, you eat it with a fork. I am obsessed with this because a couple of our friends are moving out of town, and they emptied their pantry into our arms, and there was some enchilada sauce in the holdings that means I'm going to be revisiting.
If only you hadn't eaten all the tortilla chips.
My chilaquiles recipe. You know what? They sell tortilla chips on the open market. I think I can get more.
Okay, great.
Also, those were the wrong kind. I can't use those for chilaquiles.
Okay, good to know. Hey, we made it, and it's only been 45 minutes instead of an hour and a half.
This is what we read on the internet is the proper
the optimal time
for a podcast episode. So you're welcome.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at BellwetherFriends, BellwetherFrnds. You can find us on Facebook, where we regularly post our episodes. We're on Tumblr, irregularly. We are everywhere you could possibly be on the internet. If you want, you can look us up on iTunes and give us a rating and a review. And if you don't want to, that's fine.
You can tweet at us and tell us how much you love us anytime.
Right, that's fine. We might even prefer that. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at Surly Spice, SurlySpice.
And in our In and Out. And our In-N-Out music was provided by Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie, HimissJulie.
Bye.
Bye.